Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is a special election edition of Your Call. We'll be airing a special today through Thursday, 11 a.m. to noon, to focus on state and local issues. Well, California voters will decide the fate of another rent control measure at a time when the COVID pandemic and financial hardship has led to millions of people struggling to pay rent. 4 million people in California are at risk of eviction. According to the U.S. Census, more than 56% of families in California spend 30% or more of their income on rent. According to Ballotpedia, California Proposition 21, the Local Rent Control Initiative, would allow local governments to enact rent control on housing that was first occupied over 15 years ago, with an exception for landlords who own no more than two homes with distinct titles or subdivided interests. So how would Prop 21 protect tenants, and how would it mitigate the affordable housing crisis? Today we are joined by Robin Yurevich, a staff reporter for the award-winning nonprofit Capital in Maine. Robin reports on California's housing crisis and economic inequality. Hi, Robin. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you. There's so much money being poured into Prop 21, which we will talk about in just a minute. First off, can you tell us the major differences between Proposition 10, the rent control measure that failed in 2018, and Proposition 21 that is on this year's ballot?
Yes. Prop 10, the basic difference is that Prop 10 was a repeal of California's 1995 Costa-Hawkins Rental Housing Act. And I should probably give a little explanation of what Costa-Hawkins is.
Please.
Costa-Hawkins is a law that restricts the ability of cities in California to enact rent control laws. The biggest thing that it does is it makes it legal for landlords to raise rents as high as the market will bear when a new tenant enters a unit. And it exempts certain properties from rent control. It exempts all properties built after 1995 for cities that would enact rent control laws after the passage of Costa-Hawkins. But for cities like San Francisco and Oakland and Los Angeles that have longstanding rent control laws, like for example in Los Angeles, all properties that were enacted that were built after the local rent control law was enacted in 1978 are exempt. So in LA we have a rent control law, but it only controls the rent on properties built before 1978. And so that's what the law does. Now, in 2018, Prop 10 would have repealed the entire law. Now, Prop 21 is a reform, and what Prop 21 would do is it would allow landlords to raise the rent 15% when a new tenant enters a unit. And it would allow cities to cover properties that were built in the previous 15 years under rent control. And it removes an exemption under Costa-Hawkins for single-family homes. It still exempts from rent control houses that are units in which where a landlord owns two or fewer units. So it gives some concessions.
All right, so let's just talk about who's bankrolling these, the Proposition 21, so much money here. According to Cal Matters, major supporters include the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, the California Nurses Association, and the California Democratic Party. They are spending a whopping $28 million so far. Those opposed include Essex Property Trust, a corporate landlord, the California Business Roundtable, an equity residential or corporate landlord. They have spent a lot more, $57 million opposing Prop 21. So once again, Robin, there's so much money being poured into this proposition.
Yes, just like in 2018. And spending may exceed what was spent in 2018, where I believe the no side of Prop 10 spent $66 million and the yes side spent $22 million. Even though a lot of people have already voted, money is still coming in. So I think that we might exceed those amounts.
It's also interesting to learn that The California Democratic Party, Senator Bernie Sanders, supports this law, but California Governor Gavin Newsom opposes Prop 21.
Yes, Governor Gavin Newsom does. He opposed Prop 10 in 2018. And he makes an argument that a lot of cities do, that this would restrict the supply of affordable housing.
Is that the main argument?
That's his argument, yes. And that is the main argument. I mean, it's an argument that says that if landlords are constrained by rent control, then they'll rent fewer apartments. Basically that the supply will not increase. But there are a number, I mean, that's been the traditional argument, but now there are cities and economists are beginning to say, sure, the solution is to build more affordable housing, but that's been said for many years, and affordable housing still isn't being built. So many economists who might have previously said, you know, this is a bad idea just based on the laws of supply and demand, are now saying, well, rent control is a reasonable stopgap solution because it's going to keep keep rents from skyrocketing and keep people from being displaced in the near term, and, you know, to some degree preserve the affordable housing stock. Because now, when under the current laws, like say in a rent-controlled city, like say San Francisco, say a person's been living in an apartment for 40 years and their rent is $400, when they move out, the landlord is going to raise that rent to, you know, $4,000 or $3,000, and that's no longer an affordable unit.
Well, we're going to talk about Proposition 21 for the next 20 or so minutes. So if you have any questions or comments on this, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Again, Proposition 21 would allow cities to pass rent control measures on almost all rental housing as long as it is more than 15 years old. The California Democratic Party, Senator Bernie Sanders, supports this. The California Nurses Association, California Democratic Party, supports it. So far, they've spent over $28 million. Those opposed include corporate landlords, including Equity Residential and Exis Property Trust, the California Business Roundtable. They have spent a whopping $57 million. So much is spent on these propositions. Robin, let's talk about what people are dealing with right now. You've got a piece for Capital and Maine called Revolt of the Landlords, How Big Real Estate Crushed a Rent Control Law. And you open your piece with a story about 75-year-old Perry Engel and his wife. In 2014, the monthly rent for their one-bedroom apartment in a Santa Rosa senior citizen complex began to shoot up from $925 a month to $1,435 2 years later. Tell us more about Perry and his wife.
Well, they're very interesting people. I mean, Perry Engel is a retired, I believe he was an accounts manager for Blue Cross, Blue Shield. He had a 14-year career in the military. He was like basically a conservative guy. He was very proud that when he was in the National Guard, he was often called on to guard Ronald Reagan, who he greatly admired. But he's a guy who now said, and, you know, he's somebody, I guess, with these beliefs who would believe that, you know, the free market should prevail. But he says, now in housing, the free market's really not working. He's completely squeezed, and so are many of his neighbors. When his building was bought by a new company in 2014, most of his neighbors were displaced. A lot of them had to leave Santa Rosa altogether. This was a senior citizen building. He managed to hang on by getting a job at Target across the street from him. But now he says, you know, well, he had to give up that job because he really couldn't give them, you know, everything the job demanded because he was getting older. And he's still very, very sharp. But he said that he, you know, if there is any more rent increases, he's going to have to probably find subsidized housing or look elsewhere. He's somebody that did have savings based on his career. But in 2018, when the financial crisis hit, he lost most of those savings. So now he just relies on you know, what he has coming in, Social Security and any pension.
It's been incredible to learn about what's going on in Santa Rosa. I have a lot of family there. I mean, I grew up in that area, and the rents have just skyrocketed in Santa Rosa over the last, you know, 5 or so years.
Yeah. It's a place where, as you know, I mean, I was just learning about it, but it's a place that has many people who work in the service industry because of the wineries and people who work in agriculture. It's not a very high-wage area. But people who have been earning those higher wages from the Bay Area but are still priced out of places like San Francisco and the East Bay are moving up there in search of more affordable housing. And what's affordable to those people is not affordable to traditional residents of Santa Rosa. So many of them are getting pushed out.
As you report, Santa Rosa City Council adopted a rent control ordinance in 2016. And then the California Apartment Association collected enough signatures to put the measure to a 2017 referendum and spent almost $900,000 to defeat it.
Yes. And you know, I wrote this story really with the question in mind of why is it so hard for cities to enact rent control laws? And even more fundamentally, why do so few California cities have rent control laws? Because in many of those cities, like Santa Rosa, the majority of people are renters, right? So, you know, it would make sense. The majority of renters do favor rent control. But it's very, very difficult because one of California's most powerful industries is the real estate industry. And it is not only deep-pocketed, but the industry is on top of an amazing number of local cities and their politics. It dipped into a rent control fight in National City, which is a tiny town on the U.S.-Mexico border, and in many other rent control fights. I mean, that's not to say that it's invincible. There are cities that have enacted and defended their rent control laws, but it was very hard in Santa Rosa, and didn't prove successful ultimately.
We have an email from Stephen who says, can you please go over again the basics of what Proposition 21 would do? So again, it would allow cities to pass rent control measures on almost all rental housing as long as it is more than 15 years old?
Yes. It removes the exemption on single family homes.
Okay.
The other thing, the biggest thing that it does, and this is the prize provision that the real estate industry fought for 12 years before Costa-Hawkins was enacted in 1995. And Costa-Hawkins is the law that Prop 21 would reform. The basic provision is something called vacancy decontrol, and that allows landlords to raise rents as high as they like when a tenant vacates a unit. And many landlords say that they can live with rent control with that provision because it allows them to recoup any losses. Like one landlord put it to me, that removing that provision would slice their throats. And the other side contends that, you know, this allowed that Prop 21 would allow them to raise the rent 15% when a new tenant moves in. So they contend that provides a fair rate of return for landlords.
We have an email from Gabrielle who says, can you talk about how Prop 21 will prevent long-term renters from being evicted? If someone is paying $400 a month and the landlord would be able to raise the rent to $4,000 if the unit was vacant, what prevents the landlord from evicting the current tenant?
Well, that she makes a very good argument for vacancy control. And, you know, I think she's referring to a phenomenon that happens a lot in cities, especially in cities with really hot real estate markets, is that when someone is paying very low rent, often landlords will invoke another law called the Ellis Act, which allows them to go out of business, to stop, you know, to take the property off the rental market. And when they do that, you know, tenants get displaced, and they can wait 5 years and then re-rent the place, or they can convert it to tenant in common arrangements, which is like a way for people to buy an apartment, or convert it to condos, or demolish the building altogether.
So you're going to need, like in a city like San Francisco, there are a lot of protections for long-term renters and people who might be evicted. But what happens in cities where you don't have those protections? I mean, now that's the big question.
Well, now in California, California housing activists, after the defeat of Prop 10, did help to pass an anti-rent gouging law called Assembly Bill 1482. And that does bar evictions except for just cause statewide currently. Now, it may be a little bit difficult to enforce because people aren't sure what the laws are or how to invoke their rights. You know, in a city that has rent control, they would go to the rent board or whatever agency administers that. In a city that doesn't have rent control, you know, they might just have to go to court. But they are legally protected now against all but just cause evictions. But that doesn't protect people in the case that the person who emailed cited, because a landlord can still say in a rent-controlled city, I intend to go out of business. I'm going to take this property off the market. And then the person who's paying $400 a month or $1,000 a month is out and can probably not find another place to live in San Francisco.
Right. And Gabrielle says, I can see that this prop would prevent annual huge rent increases, but does it do anything to protect long-term tenants?
Well, it doesn't. Repeal the Ellis Act, but it does remove some of the incentive that she refers to. Because if you can only raise rent 15% between tenants, then you don't have a incentive of a windfall profit once you evict somebody.
Well, thank you for the email, Gabrielle. Let's go to a few callers. Let's hear from Arlinda in Oakland. Hi, Arlinda. Welcome to the show.
I just wanted to make it clear that single-family homeowners are not going to be affected by this. And if you own one or two homes, that you would not be affected by. They would not be under rent control according to this. Also, a 15-year gap building. If you build a new building, it's off rent control under this ordinance for 15 years. That gives the person building the new building 15 years to recoup all their investments before it goes under rent control. So that's a stimulus for building new affordable new housing before this ordinance would go into effect. And I also want to reiterate that...
Whoops, sorry.
I just want to reiterate that by California law, landlords are guaranteed a fair return on investment, which means if they are not making money with the current rents, they can apply to their local rent boards and get their rent raised to a return that guarantees them a fair return on investment. So landlords will still make money, just as they could no longer gouge renters.
Well, thank you for that. Just to read from CalMatters, cities would not be able to cap rent increases by mom-and-pop landlords who own no more than two small properties, such as single-family homes or condos. Can you talk more about single-family homes and how they would be affected by this?
Yes. Right now, all single-family homes are exempted, so that if you rent a property on a lot, and it's the only property on the lot, then it's not covered by rent control. But there is an increasing phenomenon in California. It started after 2018 during the foreclosure crisis, where big corporate landlords came in and purchased a lot of those single-family homes that were foreclosures. And so many people rent single-family homes from corporate landlords, like Invitation Homes, which is actually a giant contributor to this to the No on 21 effort. And under this proposition, if you rent a single-family home from a corporate landlord, that property would be covered by rent control. However, as the caller said, if you rent a single-family home from someone who owns two or fewer properties, then it's not covered under rent control.
All right. Well, thank you for that call. Today, we're speaking with Robin Yurovich, a staff reporter for Capital and Maine, an award-winning nonprofit publication. Robin reports on California's housing crisis and economic inequality. And right now, we are talking about Proposition 21. It would allow cities to pass rent control measures on almost all rental housing, as long as it's more than 15 years old. Those who support Proposition 21 include the California Nurses Association, the California Democratic Party. They have spent $28 million so far to support Prop 21. Those opposed include the California Business Roundtable and the corporate landlords Essex Property Trust and Equity Residential. They have spent a whopping $57 million on no on 21. What questions do you have about Proposition 21? We're going to talk with Robin for about five more minutes. So now would be a good time for you to get your question in. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's go next to Julie. Hi, Julie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to hear all this stuff. I had two quick questions. One is, does this proposition need a simple majority to pass? And if it does pass, when would it be effective?
Yes, it does. And when would it be effective? That's a good question. I'm not sure exactly when it would take effect.
I'm looking at CalMatters. I don't see anything either, but that is a very good question, and we will look for that answer. When will this take effect?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good program. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We actually have full lines on this, so why don't we take a few more callers? Damien, if you can just give me the first name of the caller, and we'll go through a few of them. We'll get that queued up. Let's see. Let's go to Steve in San Francisco. Hi, Steve.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking the call. My family has lived in San Francisco for 100 years, and we own properties. My family relies on them. I have one aunt in a care home, another one who's an invalid. We don't have government pensions. This is how we pay to take care of ourselves. I'd like to know when all of these rent control things come up, which, of course, I disagree with. It's private property. It's not public property. If the people of California want to have public housing, fine. Then everybody gets taxed, and then they build these houses. But to take somebody's private property and decide that they're going to decide what somebody charges, I think is basically illegal. And I'd also like to make just a comment here. Why would somebody making $200,000 and up have the luxury of having rent control when they have a nice car? In fact, a lot of my tenants have housekeepers coming in to do a one-bedroom. I don't have a housekeeper. I can't afford one. So why, you know, I know we're talking about the old guy who's paying $400 a month and gets kicked out of his place. What about the young guy with a Porsche in the garage and making $250,000 a year? Why do they have the luxury of rent control?
Well, this comes up a lot on when we do shows about rent control. What are your thoughts about this, Robin, based on the reporting that you've done?
Well, Steve makes very good arguments for the no on 21 side. I mean, that is a classic argument that rent control is a blunt instrument and it doesn't, it's not means tested. On the other hand, I mean, if you think about programs that are not means tested that help people, like, for example, Social Security, those are the most popular programs because they're available to anyone. And, you know, it is true, many people do bring up, you know, this is like the person who was a student at UC Berkeley and got a rent-controlled apartment and then went on to make a six-figure income but still keeps the apartment as a, you know, pied-à-terre or something like that. That does happen, but rent control also protects people who can't afford to live anywhere else. And, in fact, the no side also makes the argument often that rent control is a bad idea because it discourages people from moving up, you know, moving up in the world or moving on to a different job because they're stuck, you know, they're tied to rent control apartment. But it also keeps neighborhoods stable and it helps people who can't afford, you know, who otherwise couldn't afford to live in their own communities and in cities, you know, that need their services, for example, essential workers, like people who service the tourist industry or people who are teachers or people who are healthcare workers.
Right. Well, thank you for the call, Steve. Let's take one more call on this Prop 21. Let's go to Day in Oakland. Hi, Day. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. I appreciate the time and the chance to speak.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. So I wanted to call in based on what Robin had brought up regarding when she was explaining the Costa-Hawkins Act. And I want to be corrected for all the listeners that the Costa-Hawkins Act doesn't protect any single-family home, those renters in single-family homes, because, what she mentioned was that the homeowner or the landlord could raise the rent to market value when a new tenant comes in. And so the correction is that that is incorrect, basically. And I'm a perfect example. My daughter and I are currently homeless, living in a motorhome on the streets the past 2 years because a homeowner raised the rent. We were tenants there for 6 years, and for just her own personal reasons, needed more rent and raised it so high that none of us living there could afford to stay. Wow. So we just basically moved. We weren't evicted. We were forced out. And so that we just had a month-to-month lease after the first year. And so that's kind of the problem, is that people get their first year lease and then they just continue month-to-month based on what the homeowner, the landlord, will offer. I even asked for a renewal of the lease, and she was like, no, it's fine, let's just keep it month-to-month. And then basically she was advised by the Oakland housing department. She checked with them first, and they advised her, oh yes, you can raise it to market value, and then gave her the proceeded to give her the market value rate, which was roughly $1,000 per room, and we were paying a $2,000 and for a place that was basically a dump. And she realized that she could get $3,000, and that's exactly what she did. No matter. And I had given her no reason to force, you know, a raise in rent, you know, perfect tenant, always having, you know, paying the rent on time and making repairs myself. So I think it's really important that Prop 21 addresses that. If it doesn't protect those tenants, then that's going to still keep happening. People, like myself, can't afford with perfect credit to have an apartment, rent an apartment, you know, in a nice building. You have to have perfect credit, all of that. So often people who kind of have a lower income, or maybe students going to college, they have to share a single family house, 3 or 4 bedrooms, and then it's more affordable to live there. Okay,
well,
so there was three adults and 2 children displaced when she, you know, raised the rent. So that needs to be really clear. It's not happening. Raising rents did not happen only when new tenants come in. She did it anytime she wanted. She just had to give us 2 months' notice.
And that's we've heard so many stories like this, Day, from a number of people around the Bay Area. And I'm so sorry to hear about your story. Thank you so much for calling in and sharing. Robin, quick final thoughts on Day's story.
Oh, yeah, that's a terrible story. I mean, I think what she's saying is that it's a single family. It was a single family home, even though there were several families maybe living there. And those are not covered by rent control. And what the one thing to clarify too is that, and if it weren't a single family home, I believe in Oakland, she would have some recourse because it would be covered by rent control law. And the other thing to clarify, I think this is sort of over and above what Dave said, but that Prop 21 wouldn't automatically. Prop 21 is a law that allows cities to enact broader and tougher rent control measures. It wouldn't do anything right away. It would just give cities the freedom to enact those tougher measures.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Robin. Thanks for reporting on Prop 21.
Well, thank you for having me. It's very complicated. So
yeah, I know. We had some emails from people saying, can you please just go over the basics again? Robin Yurovich is a staff reporter with Capital and Maine. She reports on California's housing crisis and economic inequality. And you can find more about Proposition 21, which would allow cities to pass rent control measures on almost all rental housing, as long as it's more than 15 years old, at yourcallradio.org. Coming up after a break, we will talk about California Proposition 19, which would give Californians 55 or older a property tax break when they buy a new home. This is a special election edition of Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Later today on This American Life, a well-respected surgeon, 96 years old, has a secret that he wants the world to know. And so before he dies, he leaves a voicemail.
I have some information perhaps you might like to hear. Hanging up now. Bye.
People tossing words out into the world carelessly, and they ignite and burn for years. Later today.
This American Life at 1 this afternoon here on 91.7 FM.
I'm Tim Franks, host of BBC NewsHour. On the program, will the upsurge in violence in Afghanistan leave the peace talks in tatters? And what could it mean for a US military withdrawal? Also, the sniffer dogs of Beirut on the hunt for COVID.
The BBC News Hour this afternoon at 12 o'clock right here on 91.7 KALW.
This is a special election edition of Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are joined by Matt Levin, the data and housing reporter for CalMatters, a nonprofit newsroom committed to explaining California policy and politics. They have an incredible election guide that follows the money. Hi, Matt. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we wanted you to talk about Prop 19, but before we do that, because there's a lot of confusion and questions around Prop 21, you got together with the LA Times' Liam Dillon to talk about Prop 21 on the podcast Gimme Shelter. Can you just talk about Prop 21, what stands out for you, what it would do? There's just so many questions about how it would actually be implemented.
Yeah, so I think your previous guest was alluding to this earlier, but I think one of the most important things to remember about Prop 21 is that it doesn't mandate rent control across the state. It simply gives local governments the opportunity to expand rent control to properties that they otherwise are prohibited from expanding rent control to now because of the Costa-Hawkins law, that 1995 law that your previous guest was alluding to. It's also interesting, I mean, just politically, you know, this measure is polling in the 30s, according to a UC Berkeley poll, which is, you know, proponents can't be super excited about that. It looks like it's polling maybe a little more favorably than its predecessor, Prop 10, which lost pretty overwhelmingly at the polls. But it's not an auspicious sign that it's only polling in the 30s at this point. Typically, you want a measure to be polling at least in the high 50s, especially if you're going to be outspent, which the proponents of Prop 21 already have been.
Right. The supporters have spent $28 million so far. The opponents of Prop 21 have spent a whopping $57 million so far.
Yeah.
It's huge money is being spent on these props. All right, so that's 21. But if you do have any questions, Matt has looked at this. So if you have any pressing questions, we will definitely take them. Let's talk about Prop 19. So I'll just read from CalMatters, and then you can tell us what this would actually do. It would give Californians 55 or older a big property tax break when buying a new home, and to fund that new tax break, it would curtail a separate tax break Californians may receive on homes inherited from parents and grandparents. How did Prop 19 end up on the ballot?
It's a convoluted story. So your listeners may remember 2 years ago, they may have voted on a very similar measure. This was Prop 5. This was put on the ballot by the California Association of Realtors. And it does much of what Prop 19 would do if it was approved this year. So Prop 5 would have allowed senior homeowners, those age 55 or older, to retain their very low property taxes, which they're blessed with because of Prop 13, should they decide to buy a new home, even if it's a more expensive home. That initiative was pretty overwhelmingly rejected. The realtors are back now. And part of the reason that initiative was rejected 2 years ago was because most nonpartisan analysts thought it was going to have a pretty negative financial impact on local governments, meaning, you know, schools and cities might lose billions of dollars if that initiative would have passed. So the realtor said, you know what, we're going to fix that part of this, and we're going to do so by closing this quote-unquote loophole, which is if you inherit a property from your parents and you rent it out, you would still inherit their low property taxes. The property would not be reassessed at market value. The realtors went to the California legislature and basically said, okay, we have this initiative. Are you guys down for this? And the legislature said, yes, as long as the firefighters also get a portion of this. So there's a provision there in the initiative that would allow some of the new revenue to go towards a state firefighting fund, a new fund that's just devoted to wildfire prevention. And so kind of at the realtors' behest, the legislature put this on the ballot, and that is why voters will be voting on it right now.
So in the CalMatters guide, it says, why am I voting on this? Because realtors really, really, really want you to pass it. And if you look at the supporters of this and the money that's being spent, the California Association of Realtors, the California Association of Realtors PAC, and the National Association of Realtors have spent a whopping $41 million. And again, this is to support Proposition 19. The major donor in opposition is the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. They have spent only $22,000.
Yeah, that's right. So there really isn't much of an organized campaign against this. And to be clear, on the pro side, you know, not only do you have the realtors, but the California Democratic Party supports this measure. Governor Gavin Newsom supports this measure. The Firefighters Union supports this measure. There's a lot of progressive politicians that also support this measure. The no side is pretty much just Howard Jarvis and then a collection of Republican legislators. You know, the California State Association of Counties is not a big fan of this initiative. They're somewhat worried about how specific counties, their finances might be impacted. But there isn't a ton of well-organized opposition to this.
The opponents say that this is a giveaway to realtors who are twisting public policy to boost their commissions. What does your reporting say about that?
So the realtors are undoubtedly in favor of this because they hope it will gin up home sales, which means more commissions for realtors. I think for your average Californian, you know, the realtors are arguing this will put more homes on the market, which would make for more opportunities for first-time home buyers. If we can get more homes to actually be put up for sale, maybe that would somewhat lower the exorbitant prices that Californians face when trying to buy a home. It's interesting because there are portions of this measure that I think many progressives and equity advocates would be big fans of, you know, especially closing that inheritance tax loophole. But there are other portions that, you know, the primary benefit of this is going to go to homeowners who are over age 55, and those skew wealthy, high income, you know, and more likely to be white than people of color. So it's interesting. Even though Prop 21, the rent control proposition, may be getting more headlines, I get more emails and more friends asking me, like, what do I do with Prop 19 than I do on, you know, for any other initiative on the ballot?
Well, today we're talking about it with Matt Levin. He is a reporter with CalMatters. And if you have any questions about Prop 19 or any questions about Prop 21. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. So supporters, again, the realtors, the firefighters, the California Democratic Party, the California Nurses Association, say it will incentivize seniors stuck in oversized homes to downsize, as you said, Matt, freeing up inventory in the state's expensive housing market. When you look at the data, say in the last 5-10 years, are people over 55 downsizing? Is that happening?
So in California, people are less likely to move than in other states. Now, the reasons for that are complicated, but yes, part of the reason, particularly if you have, you know, lived in a house for a long time, is because of Prop 13, you're paying very low property taxes. So, and I think this is especially true in the Bay Area.
Right.
You know, you could be sitting on a $1 million home. Let's say you bought it in the early 90s. You know, you're paying, I don't know, $4,000 or something, maybe a little more for your base property tax. That's probably an underestimate, but you're certainly not paying as much as you would be if you bought it last year. So, yes, I think at the margins, this does play a factor in people's decisions to move. I think it's important to note that under current California law, you can move within your own county and still retain that low property tax base. You just have to move into a house that doesn't cost more than what your current house sells for. So that kind of ensures that this, you know, this will be a you know, quote unquote, true downsizing. You know, under this proposition, you can actually buy a more expensive property and still retain some of your property tax break. But proponents argue, well, look, you know, the property market in California is so insane. You know, you even in the house, even if the house you're currently living in is worth a lot, downsizing to a smaller condo in a different part of the state may still cost more money than what your current house is worth.
Right. And CalMatters says that this would give Californians 55 or older a big property tax break when buying a new home. What are we talking about? What does big mean?
It could be, you know, thousands of dollars per year. Thousands of dollars per year. It depends on exactly, you know, how long you've owned your home and then the home that you're moving into. It could be tens of thousands possibly. It's a significant chunk of money, you know, especially if you're a senior on fixed income, which is what the proponents of the initiative would argue.
And who's going to determine how much of that money would go to firefighters and how it would be spent?
So the short answer is the Department of Finance in the state. So this is actually one of the parts of the measure that's the most complicated, which is how exactly the funding gets distributed and how much of it is actually going to end up in that firefighting fund. So, you know, some of the increased revenue will naturally go to local governments and schools, so city, counties, and school districts. To the extent that the state saves some money because of this measure, that funding will go to counties that have lost money because of this initiative. And then after that, it would go to this firefighting fund. So that's kind of the convoluted way this initiative would spread the revenue around.
All right. Well, let's go to a caller on Proposition 19. Let's hear from Anna in Mountain View. Hi, Anna. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm wondering, you know, I'm in favor of fixing inheritance of multiple properties, not resetting the assessment. But I'm concerned about the details of this in regards to individual homeowners. You know, what if a student is in college and the parents die
Are they going to then have to sell the house because they can't, you know, they can't afford to keep it, since the only way they could keep it is to rent it out, and that seems to be prohibited under this. You know, that's not somebody who's making a huge amount of money as a trust fund baby. That's just somebody who wants to keep their family home so they can return to it. And this proposition doesn't seem to have anything in there to protect people like that. And in regards to, you know, disaster victims, I was a disaster victim, lost my home in a fire. In fact, we were the ones that got the, you know, the groups from our fire got the lawsuit that allows people already to transfer their property tax basis to another county. The other county simply has to decide to be one of those counties, and they can already do that under existing law. This law just makes it so that all of them have to, but they already can. So, you know, that's something that, you know, people just need to address with different counties if they want to do that. So.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about your home, Anna. Let's get a response from Matt. Matt?
Yeah, so I'm also sorry to hear about your home. So to the first kind of hypothetical you outlined, the college student whose parents pass away and that student inherits the house, you're correct. If that student, under this measure, if that student inherited the home, they would have to pay higher property taxes than what their deceased parents were paying. And yes, opponents of Prop 19 will argue that will, you know, curtail the ability of people who inherit homes to keep those properties unless they're living in them. It is, you know, more likely that because of higher property taxes, people who inherit properties may put those properties on the market. To the second portion of the caller's question, I should have said this earlier. There is a portion of this initiative that also applies to individuals who are disabled or victims of natural disasters like wildfires. They, you know, regardless of age, would be eligible to bring their low property taxes to a different house, a new house that they buy. The caller also made a good point here. There are some counties that are already allowing not just victims of natural disasters and the disabled, but seniors generally to move into their county and still pay low property tax rates based off what they were previously paying. There's about 10 counties that do this, including some big ones, LA County, I believe Santa Clara County, although someone should Google that right now. I'm not 100% sure. What this initiative does is makes this statewide. So counties don't have a choice anymore. They have to opt in.
All right. Well, thank you again for calling in, Anna. Let's go next to Paula in San Francisco. Hi, Paula. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you. I'd just like to say that my family lived in San Francisco for 60 years in a little Victorian. My mother left it to me, and now I'm a senior. And I would like to leave this to my children, that if this proposition comes in, they will not be afford to pay the taxes. And I think this this 19, it destroys family heredity. It takes away the legacy, the individual legacy that families want to leave, property. They're often their only thing to leave to their children, and this destroys it. And it also means that I would have to leave San Francisco, and my children could never live here. So that's my point. And I think it's despicable throwing in the firefighters, because that's a red herring. And the real estate people are just going to boom, boom, boom while we pack our little suitcases and just leave San Francisco.
Well, thank you for that comment, Paula. And if you're just
welcome.
Tuning in, the reason why Paula called in to say that is because Prop 19 would give Californians 55 or older a big property tax when they buy a new home. And to fund that tax break, it would curtail a separate tax break Californians receive on homes inherited from their parents and their grandparents. I just wanted to read that again, Matt, for those who maybe haven't been following 19. How would you respond to Paula's comment? I'm sure a lot of other people are you know, have similar stories.
Yeah, I think that's, I think Paula's situation is kind of what especially older homeowners in California with children are wrestling with. It's a decision between, you know, if I want to move, can I get, you know, it would be great to have these property tax breaks that Prop 19 allows. But at the same time, if my kids aren't going to live in the house that I'm leaving to them, which, you know, for most people is the biggest source of wealth they have when they leave it to their children, you know, are my kids going to be able to pay property taxes when the value of the home I'm leaving them is, you know, could be worth over $1 million, right? If she's in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So I think what she's wrestling with is similar to what a lot of older Californians with children are wrestling with. And I do want to be clear here. So the loophole that this closes, if you leave your home to your children, if your children live in the home, they still retain your low taxes, your low property taxes. It's only if you rent it, it's only if your children rent it out, or use it as an Airbnb or like a vacation home, will they be paying these higher property taxes.
Well, we have a similar email from Steve who says that he bought a place in 1988 for under $200,000. It is now worth $2.5 million. Which is incredible. Yeah. He said, why should my 27-year-old son, who is working in Connecticut, be forced to sell his family home, move back, or charge exorbitant rents in order to keep it? Well, thank you for that email, Steve. Again, Proposition 19 would give Californians 55 or older a property tax break when they buy a new home. To fund that break, it would curtail a separate tax break Californians receive on homes inherited from parents and grandparents. You've got the California Association of Realtors, the California Association of Realtors PAC. A number of realtors support this, along with Gavin Newsom, the California Democratic Party. They're spending a whopping $41 million. That is all realtors who are spending that. Those opposed include the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, and they've spent $22,000 on this one so far. We've been talking about Prop 19 with Matt Levin, the data and housing reporter for Cal Matters, a nonpartisan newsroom committed to explaining California politics and policy, and they have an excellent voter guide that follows the money. Thanks so much for joining us, Matt.
Thank you.
And you can find the Cal Matters voter guide at yourcallradio.org. If you go to kalw.org, click on our election box and all of our election shows will be there. The news department has done a great job of putting together election briefs. These are short 2-minute explainers of state and local measures. You can find that at kalw.org. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Damian Miner for keeping our studio running. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.